As we approach Thanksgiving, I think of home. Living in the North, Thanksgiving has always been a time my family came together. Christmas was always a bit iffy for the snow. But Thanksgiving was the real American family holiday that wasn't tied to any religion. In the story to the children, the fable told was finding a treasure at home. This Jewish fable was one of from many centuries earlier from Central Europe. But the theme of the fables, stories, and myths, and many true stories about finding real treasure at home are part of all of our generations. The great movie classic E.T. of the 70s, Extraterrestrial, was constantly looking for a way to get home. And the conclusion of the adventure was that E.T. got to go home. A generation earlier, Dorothy's adventure in Oz was about her dream of home and all those emotional ties to home. The movie ends with the line, "You can always go home if you just wish for it." A generation earlier, the great jazz musician John Coltrane spent his 20s running in place. Early in life, he had trouble finding his way. A narcotics habit stifled his musical career. Then at the age of 33, something happened and he underwent a spiritual conversion. He renounced drugs and alcohol and created his own quartet. And everybody working with him was impressed with his newly found conviction and dedication, both musically and professionally. Coltrane went on to record his masterpiece, A Love Supreme, after the music became for him a form of worship. He had come home. One of the earliest coming home stories follows the theme is the story of the prodigal son. And this parable by Jesus tells of a man with two sons. The youngest decides to take his legacy early. His father gives him his inheritance and the young man leaves. We know the young man spends his birthright on foolish sensory pleasures. When he, as a Jew, hits bottom and realizes he is living lower than the swine he is tending, he decides to come home and put himself at his father's mercies. Arriving, he is welcomed by his father, saying, "Quickly bring out the robe, my best one, and put it on him, and put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is now alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to celebrate his coming home. Much of literature concerns itself with the coming home theme. Robert Frost's great poem, which you heard a portion, and I advise you to read it sometime, The Death of the Hired Man, deals with this theme. In the poem, a New England farmer's hired man returns to the farm as the winter turns bad. In the poem, the father's wife tells her husband why the hired man came back to the house, saying, as if she played unheard his some tenderness that wrought on him beside her at night. "Warren," she says, "he has come home to die. You needn't be afraid he'll leave you this time." "Home," he mocked gently, "yes, what else but home?" "It all depends on what you mean by home. Of course, he's nothing to us, any more than the hound that came a stranger to us out of the woods, worn upon the trail." Home is the place where, when you have to go there, they have to take you in. I should have called it something you somehow haven't to deserve. Home is the place where, when you have to go there, they have to take you in. This is a special feeling that is enlisted by coming home, or the thought of coming home, or the promise of coming home. Home is the place where you will be accepted for who you are. You can bring your imperfections home. You can go unshaven at home. You can be accepted as being functional or dysfunctional as you are. Part of the feeling of home is the security of being accepted as an imperfect human being without errors or falsehoods. Like the father of the prodigal son, we are accepted despite the errors we may make. Like Martin Buber's story about the true treasure was at home. The feelings generated by the concept of home is one of belonging. Sunday mornings, in fellowship societies, churches and congregations, in our association, we celebrate coming back together, belonging to a church. This is one of our blessings. In Unitarian Universalism, belonging doesn't depend upon any particular belief structure. I have heard it said that Unitarian Universalists can believe anything they want. This is not quite true. Our right of conscience means not that we can believe anything we want, as it is often expressed, but that we are free to believe what we must. I feel there's a significant difference between want and must. Want takes us on self-serving paths. Must takes us on a journey along a road for the responsible search for truth and meaning, and the ethical actions that come out of those truths. This is not the whole of it either. One of the primary tensions in Unitarian Universalism is between the individuality and that of community. We recognize that the essential role of the individual, but calls us to honor the primary role of community. That is to say, when our individual beliefs or action harms our community, it must be suppressed. The philosopher Isaiah Berlin wrote, "Only if a person truly belongs to a community, naturally and self-consciously, can one enter into the living stream and lead a full, creative, spontaneous life, at home in the world, at one with self and one's fellows." In other words, membership in community and family allows us to be more fully human. The glue that calls us to home also calls us into religious community. This is belonging. We are allowed to be the imperfect individuals, but wills us to sacrifice some of our individualism for the opportunity to be together in community. This is more than just tolerance, but respect for each other's views and beliefs so that we can honor each other's journeys. This respect has become a strain in the current political climate in many families and in other church communities. This, I feel, is why we cannot believe and act as we want, but as we must. When somebody asks me, "What do Unitarian Universalists believe?" I know how to answer. I will be able to say, ours is a covenantal church. Individual members believe many things, but we are in trust together to walk together in mutual respect and love, encouraging one another's spiritual growth and responsible search for truth. Together we see truth for a larger community than just ourselves. Covenantal life is not easy. When we live in covenant, we agree that the individual beliefs and actions are less important than our desires to be in community. Here's two stories to illustrate. The first was a suburban church outside of Buffalo. When I arrived, there was much discussion about an older founding member who had just returned, having lost most of his former wealth, and whose actions and behavior were not consistent with our principles. At the monthly men's breakfast, he would disrespect the waitstaff. Many of the women in the congregation were afraid of him because of the way he talked and the way he acted. I even had to attend choir practice because he intimidated the choir director. He was, in short, a bully. The congregation had a rights relation committee which would mediate disagreements between congregational members. 9 people complained to the Right Relations Committee about his behavior. Mediating the committee asked him to meet with him to develop a covenant. he refused to attend what he called a kangaroo court. The Right Relations Committee advised the board, and the board banned him from the property until he would agree to a behavioral covenant. Now, to exclude a person from our community was a difficult, horrible decision by the board and myself. We would like to think that our churches are a place where all are welcome. But in reality, that welcome is conditional on accepting our principles as a way of being. Here, the desire for individuality wasn't as important as the cohesion of the community. The community members really did not want his behavior back, but had trouble accepting that he had to be asked to leave. This man really needed church community during this final phase of his life, but his ego would not allow him to do that. The other congregation was in the Hartford area of Connecticut. I was at the Universalist Church of West Hartford, and the Unitarian Church of Hartford was about 3 miles away. These two congregations were classic. The Unitarian congregation operated in their head, and the Universalist congregation operated from the heart. The Universalist Church even had the mantra, "Love is the Spirit," which they not only said at the start of worship, but tried to live in the relationships between each other within the congregation and the greater world. In my first year with them, they kept an interim DRE who was not delivering on her job. She was distracted by a mother in hospice for cancer in Ohio and a sick father who died in the spring of that year. She was constantly on the road between Connecticut and Ohio. The leadership knew the RE program was going to suffer and subsequently had to rebuild the RE program after she left. Love was their spirit. As with all of our congregations, the worship hour was special and sacred. They did everything they could to allow for the differently abled, good speakers and hearing devices, pews that permitted walkers or wheelchairs, and in the building, all four floors were accessible by elevator. At worship, after the story, all the children would leave for the RE wing, and the sanctuary became noticeably calmer. And then a little girl, about 4, on the autistic scale, started attending services with her parents. She loved the services, and especially the music. I'd see her from the front here in the back dancing while the music was playing. She always came forward for the story and sometimes distracted some of the other children. Her mother and father sat with her in the very back. She would occasionally get loose, both physically or verbally. During an occasional prayer or meditation, I'd see her running down the middle aisle, saying something none of us could quite understand. The congregation reacted with tolerance. But until they got to know her story, the parents would receive those judging looks all parents understand. Why don't you do something? Then suddenly, their covenant, the spirit of love prevailed, and Grace, that was her name, was loved and was part of that entire congregation. This little girl named Grace brought the congregation grace. Let us commit once again for sharing ourselves with our community, for strengthening the community and our individual selves, so that South Church will become the place where you have to come here, we will want to take you in. Said simply by Transylvanian Unitarian Francis David 500 years ago, we need not believe alike to love alike in an ever-evolving and never-ending world. Amen.